Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, CEO, co-founder of the HR dashboard company, Employee Cycle. And today, we are going to talk about how to attract passive job seekers. Let's welcome to the podcast, Chris Wink, publisher and CEO of Technically.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes.
Thank you for the applause and welcome.
Well, you're a special guy, so you needed a special applause.
Appreciate it.
So, Chris, thanks so much for joining the podcast and being a guest. We really appreciate you.
Of course.
So before we go into the topic, can you tell us how you ended up at Technically and how has Technically evolved to become a part of the HR space?
Yeah, and it is an evolution. That's right on. So I'm one of the co-founders. I had a journalism background. About a decade ago, I was on a very traditional pathway to climb into some newspaper's city hall bureau. And I was coming out of undergraduate. I was in a state capital, Harrisburg in Pennsylvania, reporting on state government chaired by a bunch of newspapers and was beginning a normal pathway. Recognized that in my industry of journalism news making, that was in a generation's decline because of a distribution change, advertising model reevaluation, and a recession was bringing it on faster. So that pathway to get back to newspapers, like I had grown up thinking I wanted to do, was not looking very viable. So some college friends and I moved back to Philadelphia, where we all had done undergraduate at Temple University. We loved that city and wanted to find our own way. And a couple of them and I said that, hey, there's a tech community that is blossoming in Philadelphia that no one seems particularly interested in reporting on. We started covering more of it and found it was way bigger than I think a lot of people realized. And there's a lot more enthusiasm than people realized. And then other cities had reached out and said, we are having the same exact experience. We began to understand that it wasn't a Philadelphia story, but a national story of outside Silicon Valley business communities adopting some of those norms and building tech communities. And that has been the last decade, has been reporting on convening tech communities. And the latter half of your question about the transition into hiring space or talent acquisition work is probably been the last 3 to 4 years. Our reporting just tirelessly kept bumping into the growing tech companies we were covering. What is one of your biggest challenges? Access to talent acquisition, particularly diverse and inclusive talent acquisition, just general pipeline changes regardless, cross geographies, all of these things that we found reporting and our team had real thoughts on. And like any young company, we had been other sides of our business had been growing, but this was something that our essentially our customers were saying were interested in. We hosted lots of events. We still do, but we hosted primarily events, and we found more and more of the companies who were sponsoring those events were really doing it just to access or introduce themselves to talent. And that began this years-long discovery that is still ongoing for us, but finding our slice of HR work, probably top of the funnel employment branding, but we have increasingly been doing work around the actual placements, and that has been something that's so fit in well with our continued reporting on technologists and entrepreneurs, and many of the people around them.
That's awesome. So before we go into how to attract passive job seekers, let's really define what is a passive job seeker.
Yes, and I think that is a really important question, because this is a phrase that the more we've looked into the industry, it's a phrase that is defined differently than I think it's going to increasingly be defined. So for a lot of folks who, if they are familiar with the phrase passive job seeker, they might see it simply as someone who the hiring manager actively seeks out to and already has a job. So I'm the hiring manager at my company, and Bruce, I think you'd be a great candidate. You have a job. You actually like your job. But I ping you and say, hey, I really think this is a job for you. External and internal recruiters are certainly familiar with this grind, and other hiring managers are too. But also a lot of founders, if you're still involved in the hiring side of things, this is a thing you know too. You cultivate relationships and you find people who you think you want on your team, and you might find opportunities. So that's the traditional definition. Someone who works somewhere else that doesn't even know we have a damn job, who we ping and try to approach. And with that definition, there have been all these kind of crummy studies and research work that shows that passive job seekers are really crummy to hire. By that definition, they're people who expect higher than norm salaries. They're people who don't stay long at your organization. They're people who are less motivated because they feel like they've been brought in to do a specific job, so why climb? And so, of course, there's been, over the last several years, there's been a pushback against any passive job seeker strategy is foolish. You're chasing people who don't want to be there. Don't do it. I think that's a misunderstanding of what a passive job seeker can be. So that's the old definition. The definition that I see more people using, and certainly one we use, is just simply someone who does, in fact, who isn't actively seeking for a job, does not need a job right now, but who is trying to understand what opportunities are out there. So we first found this definition of passive job seekers when we surveyed the attendees of our network tech jobs fair. We do this tech jobs fair in 5 cities. We've been doing it for years. And as we began surveying them, we'd have people who had jobs who reported in surveys that they liked their jobs. They just were there at the jobs fair to kind of see what opportunities were out there. And that leads directly into the conversation we're having as an industry about employment branding, because ultimately these people who are satisfied with their job can be choosy about their next step. They just want to follow a company's narrative, understand if it is a good fit for them, and then only when serendipity comes to bear, when there's a specific opportunity that fits them best, then make a move. And we've seen a lot of interesting data about that is a very different cohort of passive job seekers than someone who you are, you know, LinkedIn spamming, as opposed to someone who you have a relationship with and who is following your company from afar as a fan and then may convert into an applicant later on.
That's interesting. And I had the pleasure of hearing you speak when you were recently giving a lightning talk at Disrupt HR in Philadelphia. And it was great. It was on point. And you said that companies should be really talking to candidates who don't even know they could be working for you yet. So can you explain what that means? And I think it really goes into alignment with what a passive job seeker is and how they perceive your company.
Yeah, I mean, it is creating fans for all of the different reasons that you want them, right? Depending on what business you're in, your fans may be people who might buy your product. They might be people who just might share your content marketing or your messaging. They also might be people who might eventually work for you or work with you. So we did a little look at our own team, and it's something like nearly a third of our team, or about just shy of 25, about a third of our team were people who were actively following your company on social. They would perhaps come to our events. We knew them. A couple of them had volunteered at our events to help, you know, check people in. We knew each other, built relationships. Maybe they had done some freelance writing for us when they had another role. But they had something, you know, going that was great. And then a specific role opened up. They had been following us all along. We knew them, and they said, yep, that's the opportunity for me, or I, you know, we perhaps shared, depending on some of the cases, and said, hey, this might be a really good fit for you specifically. And those are people who had already decided that they would or wanted to work for us before there ever was an opportunity to fit their skill set. The decision was already made. That first part of any applicant's decision tree, do I want to work at this place, had already been satiated. They already knew that. And I think that's anyone who's interested in really actively competing for talent has to be constantly on that. And you can't only be seeking really transactional relationships. We have a role now. Are you interested in that? No or yes. If no, I don't care about you. And what's tricky is as your organization grows and you're distributing the roles and responsibilities and sourcing talent, because it gets pulled apart from marketing. It gets pulled apart from perhaps events or branding. It comes pulled apart from PR. It gets pulled apart from, you know, literal on the ground recruiting. But that's why we talk so often about that full funnel of talent acquisition, because they do have to relate. The reputation of your company, of your company's leaders, are being constantly evaluated. And it's you do this with your content marketing, you do this with your event presence, you do this with your design and product rollout. So it runs exactly parallel to your trying to accrue paying clients or customers. You're also trying to accrue relationships that might convert into the best talent and teammates you ever wanted.
Nice. My wife is a real estate agent, and I hear her have the conversation every day about whether it's a buyer's or seller's market in regards to market demand and supply. So I think that same relationship and dynamic exists in the workplace as well. So do you think it's a candidate's market or an employer's market? And based off of your answer, how do you think that affects your strategy for attracting passive job seekers?
So obviously there's a really macro answer and a really micro answer. You know, where we sit in the first half of 2018 with showing some wage increase and low unemployment in most of our states and counties, sure, that would define it as a candidate's market. And that certainly is the broad macroeconomics answer is there is more pressure on employer than employee right now. That said, we know we all represent very different industries, hiring for very different people. It's lumpy, the distribution of access to talent. So that ranges a ton. We hire reporters and events producers and salespeople and operations people, and those are different segments of an economy. But I think there's an even longer term or longer tail answer. And when I hear people say smart things about the long-term relationship to employer-employee has changed, I think this is what they're getting at. And that's rather than the macroeconomics answer of you know, suppression of wages for different macro reasons. Instead, what's interesting is the relationship to employer-employee has changed because we are so able to share information about each other. If you're a rotten employer, it's going to be really hard to hide that. We're a news organization. We report on all sorts of organizational challenges across our communities, and we are an organization ourselves. So, yes, it's the glass door. Yes, it's social web. Yes, it's just, you know, back channel conversations. It's LinkedIn. We can define where Bruce has worked, whether or not that organization wants Bruce to be speaking on behalf of that organization. So there's more transparency than ever in everything we do, but certainly in choosing where you want to work. So in that sense, yeah, I mean, it's always going to be the employee's option, because there definitionally is going to be more transparency about the organization than there might be about the individual job candidate. An individual job candidate might put out a lot on the web. They might be really open and transparent about their pathway, and that's a really great sales tactic. But I think the levers of power are much more in the hands of the candidate. There's more transparency than ever before. So in that sense, I think long-term, we are in a candidate's kind of situation. There are big, you know, other macroeconomics changes that can alter that. And, you know, we're in a big conversation about heady issues that are probably not the right fit for here. But broadly, I think, yeah, candidates lead, to answer your question most directly.
Okay. So if it is a candidate's market, how does that change the way that company should try to attract passive job seekers? How does that impact their strategy?
Right. I have to side note that when you ask a question like that, you risk talking to business reporter and not, you know, HR and CEO professional. So that's, you got a little bit of a business reporter answer there. So that's, that's what you get when you interview a journalist.
It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, right. You can follow the logic when it is a candidate's lead, employment branding, that category. That's one reason why I think that is trending so heavily. What is your, you know, your employment branding? What is your organizational brand to potential job seekers? That really matters because I think you want to open up as wide a pipeline as you can. Of course, active job seekers are going to be really valuable and great. You know, when someone either they've left, or you know, their previous role wasn't a good fit, or they're entering the job market, or they're transitioning, whoever is actively seeking, those are really valuable people. We like that as a big old economy. We like the efficiency of connecting someone who is seeking employment and someone who seeks someone who can be employed. That's a great match. And so I don't mean to dismiss that, but in a candidate's market, as an employer, you have to, or a hiring manager, you have to widen your pipeline as much. So you don't want just the randomness of, think about how random it is if you put out a job posting today, or you know, you go on vacation and you put out a job posting in 10 days, you might get a fundamentally different candidate pool. Which one is better? Who has the best candidates? Who knows? It's just a randomness of the cycle of when people see something, where they are in their lives. So that's, I've always been concerned by that, just the randomness of who is right now seeking. So a passive job seeker strategy is saying, we want to build these long-term relationships with people who might be a good fit for lots of different roles. That way, whenever we have to open up a role, we know some cohort of people who might not be actively seeking are in fact looking at what we do, or we can share and say it to them. So it allows the employer to open up and have a lot more opportunities if you are maintaining long-term relationships with lots of people, which may almost sound too intuitive, but I don't think we actually do it. We're much more used to and attuned to putting up a job description and only seeing who's actively seeking and trolling job boards. Job boards are really important, but what is your strategy beyond a job board to find people who are not spending their afternoons looking there?
Great. So a lot of listeners love this podcast because what we try to do is make sure that we're providing a framework that allows the HR leader to become actionable after they listen. So let's start from the very beginning and go through what this process looks like. I'm an HR leader, whether it's a tech company, creative agency, pharma, biotech, law firm, whatever. And I realize that we either need to hire someone today or need to hire someone in the future. Where do I start? I know we talked about employer branding. You mentioned that a little bit earlier, but what is the first thing that I'm doing? Am I making sure that our foundation is straight and that our website and everything about us is great in the press and that no negative articles are coming up? Am I making sure that we have budget for positions, or am I making sure that we have open position? I mean, what am I doing? How do I start and kick this thing off?
No, and I love that question, and I love that. That I have the same thinking about how do you what do you do with it? So it really your first couple steps will depend a lot on how big an organization you are. If you're a 10 person startup, or a 1,000 person mid-sized company, or a 10,000 person giant corporate, those are gonna have really different first steps, but they're really similar. So I think it does carry because obviously some of those organizations will already have someone who is thinking about this. But step one is convene the stakeholders, and critically, you're probably broadening the stakeholder list beyond what you might often do. This might even, at some organizations, be everyone, or at least everyone who is a team lead and so does have some hiring manager role. But it is, it's going to be marketing, it's going to be PR, it's going to be your HR functions, it's going to be recruiting if you have a separate division there. You're going to have anyone who's telling, the messaging of who you are as an organization. And so step one, stakeholders, define who they even are. Step two is give them vocabulary, because understandably, your team that is very attuned to using product marketing to bring in clients or potential customers or leads, they're doing very similar tools to what you want to be following for attracting and building relationships with potential employers. So your product marketing work, your content marketing strategy that someone is likely at least thinking about, I'd hope, that person is doing some passive job seeking work. If you're showing your organization to be a thought leader, which we know we talk so often about on the sales side, that you have to be a thought leader to try to transition, you know, client customer development. Well, if you're presenting yourself as a thought leader, that also means people who are interested in your industry and might want to work for you are seeing you as a thought leader. So I do want to point out that I think a lot of this work is already done. You're trying to arm people with vocabulary. So one, who are your stakeholders? Bring them together. Two, give them the vocabulary to describe, hey, I'm perhaps leading recruiting or hiring for us, but I want to point out and make sure we all understand, in addition to the active job seekers that I most often chase down, I want a broad relationship of fans to us, and they all are passive job seekers. I think that's the second thing. Three, I think it is the content marketing work that that we talk so often about, again, on the sales side. I do think you want to see what that looks like on the employee hiring side. And so that's, you know, behind the scenes look into you and your team. This can be done on Instagram. This can be a separate team blog. This can be on your site. Often it's done with social, but playing some role, allowing recruiting or someone who's has adjacency to recruiting, or maybe even not, having someone who cares about your organizational culture and shares that publicly is such an important role. We know in so much data that the most important marketer for your roles are your coworkers, not the hiring manager, not the HR lead, but the people who work at the organization. So if you arm them with sharing stories of fun and interesting work you do, case studies that you do, that content marketing of interesting stuff you do is really important. And critically, I want to keep hitting home about why step three comes after bringing the stakeholders together is because you want marketing and PR, who might be much more driven to building client base, to understand that their work does also, work on the hiring side. So bring together stakeholders, give them the vocabulary, create a content marketing strategy or other way that you're sharing about your company culture. And then there's a lot of bigger ways. We actually did a giant ebook that we just launched in the fall with some of the strategies we've seen. It's called Beyond Recruiting. And the focus is there are other ways. There are people who build long-term event strategies where they might be tabling at an event, an industry conference, you know, a trade group, and maybe a local event if you're just, you know, depends on what you want to hire for. And they might be actively trying to hire people, but we often have at our events companies that say, I'm trying to constantly build the talent queue. I want people to constantly know that we're interesting. And so we just like being out and talking about work we do. And that additional work is get your staff out. You want them speaking at trade groups. Any place you might hire their own industries, you want them speaking. Yes, it might result in clients, which is where we're typically focused, but this is also how people start seeing, gosh, there's a lot of smart people at Employee Cycle. I'd work there someday. And even if they're not going to, 3 years later, going to apply for something, you've built a relationship. So there are a lot more strategies, and we can maybe go into that. But just to highlight what I just said, bring together the stakeholders, give them the vocabulary, start that content marketing or messaging relationship with your internal culture. And start getting your team out, speaking places and being present in a way that's not just transactional. It's also building an employee brand. And that can happen in lots of other ways. But those are the first few steps, I'd say, Bruce.
I love that. And thanks for that. So in regards to creating a framework, we also like to demystify some of the terms that guests will use. And you keep using the term content marketing. Mm. As a startup founder, I am very familiar with that term, and it's definitely something that's deeply ingrained into our marketing strategy. But for all the HR leaders out there, what is content marketing?
Yeah.
And what does that look like?
Good push on me. Yeah. So content marketing is a really big umbrella term that a lot of people handle somewhat differently. So I will somewhat controversially give you how I'm how I use it. People will use it. It's action copy anywhere on your in your organizational materials. So people will include print materials, people will say website content, but if it's action oriented. So that's a really big umbrella. I'm using a little bit more in a more focused way to say you as publisher to create followers or a discovery mechanism. So you know, this is your company might have a blog post, you might be guest posting on other sites, you might partner with a news organization. We do stuff like this and do a series about a topic you care about, an industry topic or hiring practice. It might be I think your social strategy, if it's targeted around you know, conversion, either employees or clients, I think that can fall under content marketing. A social campaign is under there. Your newslettering work, hosting a podcast like Bruce does, anything that's creating content, but ultimately to market your work. And I think when it's done best, it's again, it's not this immediate conversion. It's not, I did a blog post about my product, please now buy my product. That's something very different. That's, you know, digital marketing and, you know, product marketing and trying to convert people down a funnel. That's great stuff. But content marketing is almost definitionally about long-term relationships. It is the thought leadership thing you hear about. So it is your CEO having a column somewhere or guest posting. It's your sales lead doing something. It could be your HR or hiring manager writing something about why your company culture, why you've launched a new company culture offering. That's content marketing because you're basically trying to capture a certain kind of readership. So content marketing is creating content for a specific audience to meet a business goal. That's how I define it.
Got it. So I'm sure there are many HR listeners out there that are thinking to themselves, Chris, this sounds awesome, but I didn't get into HR to write blogs,
right,
or create newsletters, host a podcast, take pictures, post them online, shoot video. Not only did I not get into HR to do that, but that's also not my skill set.
Yep.
And I don't know how to do it. So for those who don't want to do it, what do you have to say to them? And for those who do want to do it, but don't know how or don't have the skill sets, who do they work with? Is this the opportunity where HR and marketing comes together? And how, and what does that conversation look like?
Yeah, and I so agree. You know, when you prompted me for the framework, that's why quick in my, you know, to my mind, the second point, you know, it was first bring together stakeholders and two, help people with vocabulary. Because yeah, you have to, again, depending on your organizational size and how much is on your plate, or how much you're responsible for, right, this isn't just going to be just HR lead doing this. You know, you might have a team lead that's doing your hiring. I mean, right, there's a lot of, depending on your, there's a lot of different parties. So absolutely, this is not a, here's everything you should do. It's here are all the things that you should be aware of that others do. And sometimes they are cross department and you want to be an advocate. Just like, you know, your sales team lead might be pushing product or product marketing folks to, hey, you need to give us more qualified leads. I think that HR should be doing the same thing with other teams. Hey, how are you, how is our, whomever is in, on our social team, how are you guys helping to contribute to our funnel for applicants? So first things first, agreed. You are not necessarily responsible for everything. That's not at all my point. I want you to have the vocabulary to know that these are long-term strategies. We have covered, reported on companies that built mentorship programs where they are giving people short-run opportunities of various ages within their organization. And it's been interesting to see some of those organizations talk about that as a long-term passive job seeker strategy. They're building relationships with people before, you know, it's the minor leagues, building relationships before they go to seek jobs. Those are programs that are not being led by HR. They're being led by, you know, the product team or an engineering team, or in our case, even we do stuff like that in our newsroom. That's not being led by HR, but it's certainly influencing HR's, some of their responsibilities and what they oversee. So yeah, this is, I want you to be able to articulate that. For an example, we do a pretty solid job for an organization of our size sharing about our internal team on social, in some of our newslettering, even in some of our our newsroom writing, we do often reference or try to reference our own internal culture. And that's something just a little bit because we're an organization that likes each other and there's some fun happening. But it absolutely, I put it in the category of us having an employee branding and a passive job seeker strategy that is not being led by HR. Our HR team, our operations lead, knows that relates, right? Like she understands that our, we have a culture committee in our organization, and we have someone who has an additional title in addition to her core role that supports our culture work, and she's charged in part with sharing about internal culture, and that is lots of value. We just think it impacts lots of channels of our business, but it is seen as this passive job seeker and employment branding category. It's content marketing, to use all the buzzwords. And HR is not leading it, but HR has certainly been involved in our conversations about what we feel comfortable sharing and what should be shared and what voice and tone. So I think this is HR as convener, not necessarily as HR as sole doer. But there are people who do this kind of work. We are, as an organization, do lots of work with companies on telling their story and writing about company culture. And there are lots of other people who do it too. So I think the pulled out point might be have the vocabulary, find where you're lacking. And there are resources about telling your company's story. There are other resources out there.
What about tactics that would directly involve HR, such as HR leaders participating in speaking engagement or companies submitting to become best places to work?
Yeah.
Should HR be doing that themselves? Is marketing typically responsible for that? If marketing isn't doing it, should HR be going to marketing and saying, hey, these are some of the things that we need to start thinking about? What do you think about all that?
Yeah. I think some of those categories, awards, best places to work. Yeah, that probably falls a bit in HR. And I do think that's a strategy. That makes sense. We know lots of lists. I'm in the media industry, so I can spoiler alert and tell you that they don't all have a lot of substance. But they're tools to be able to convey something about your organization. So yeah, I think that falls on HR. I think that's great. You might have, again, depending on your organizational scale, you might have someone on the marketing side that would take that kind of award or best places to work submission. But I suspect that might stay in operations and HR, unless you're getting into I think probably the hundreds or thousands of employees. I think at some point that's going to stay with HR for at least the first couple hundred employees, I would bet. So like that probably stays with HR. Some of the other, Bruce, now I'm forgetting your other one you mentioned, but yeah, best workplaces, that certainly stays with HR. What was the other example you gave?
Speaking engagement.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think anyone on your team who likes it, who enjoys it, right? Obviously you want someone who actually wants to do it and represents your organization well, should and could be speaking. We're a team of whatever I said, 23, 24, 25. I would have to think like 18 of our current teammates have spoken at a public event in the last year. I love that. And so that definitely expands beyond HR. And in my mind, one of the core justifications for that time is on the employee conversion side. I think my responsibility as CEO, a lot of my speaking and a couple of my other colleagues, we probably are a little bit more geared toward ours have to be sales driven. So I think I try to target mine a bit more to have some balance. I'm probably meant to be, a half thought leadership and half employee branding, maybe something like that. I'm making that up. but I think a lot of other staff, yeah, they're out there. It's good for them. Their personal and professional development has lots of value in investing people, our people. But in terms of the organizational conversion value, I think that is way more on the employee branding side, building relationships, making people have the right relationship to us or view of us. And that it definitely extends beyond HR. But in that sense, you want a top level support for it. I think it would be difficult for HR to suddenly say, hey, everyone should be out speaking. But I've seen on the recruiting side of teams, we do lots of events. As I said, we do lots of work around storytelling and around company culture. And often it will be a recruiting or a general hiring manager role who will be our main broker, and they will be pushing for their own, you know, engineering team to get out there and represent. You know, when they're at the table, they want someone from engineering to be there to show how smart they are. So I think HR plays a function, but that has to be cross-organizational on the speaking and being out front space.
So I'm really fascinated by the relationship between HR and marketing and how that's starting to come together so much, especially where we're talking about employer branding, mm-hmm. where we can't really distinguish who's responsible for that. And I don't know if a lot of people are talking about this now, but I'm equally as interested in who should be writing job descriptions.
Yes.
So when you were previously talking about how on the sales side, you're going out there and you're talking to customers and letting them know what the product is all about, and HR should be doing the same thing. Well, if the job is a product and the job description is basically selling the product, that almost sounds like a function that marketing should be doing, because they know how to communicate very effectively the value, the benefits, the pros of this opportunity. So what do you think about that as well?
Yeah, I think that's super, super on point. And I think I can probably relate, depending on organizational size of listeners, at our size of 20 to 25 people. We have one person formally in marketing, and we have her also doing lots in partnerships. So it's unrealistic that she's going to be involved. So I love that idea. I think she would get super nervous about that right now in where we are. So we kind of get around it, and we have some boilerplate. But I think you're so right that we have core boilerplate language that then gets included with hiring manager update. And so each individual hiring manager, we have some hiring managers who are really thoughtful about, you know, the way they want to hire for their team, and so that's where you get some strength there. And we do have a little bit of juice, but you're absolutely right. That I think is a place that even we haven't gotten to yet, though we think a lot about it. I think you're absolutely right that it is the, you've gotten someone down the funnel to essentially the conversion page. And if we paid half as much attention to our job description as a conversion page, like we do with our customer purchase pages or whatever corollary you'd make, they'd be a lot stronger. And we have had that conversation. We have put some effort into it. We are blessed with a really strong, VP of operations who she takes quite seriously what those job descriptions end up looking like. But it's not with a proper marketing lens. So I think you're right, and that is the next wave. I just think it's in HR we have to understand that storytelling is part of what we do. We may not have to do all of the literal work, but it is. Again, it depends on the scale of your organization, but most of you are not just internally facing. We are also looking out into the world in lots of different ways. And that's a cohesive organization with a strategy that delivers.
So now let's talk about the actual process of making this happen. Whether I'm the HR leader and I'm doing it myself, or we have recruiters that are doing it, or because of the speaking engagements, best places to work awards, and everything else that we've been doing, we just have people randomly saying, hey, you guys are awesome. I don't even know if you have any open positions, but I'm interested in learning more. What does that look like? How often should you be doing that? Again, I can feel some HR listeners right now thinking, I have a ton of shit to do. And now yes. I have all of these people who are interested in talking to me about working here, and we don't even have any job openings. So what does that look like? How often should I be doing that? Who should be responsible for managing this process?
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, and I want to be really literal with or really understanding of limitations. We sell into HR and recruiting function. So I have a lot of conversations with a lot of very busy recruiters that are like, you got to be kidding me with, me having to navigate this. I'm just trying to churn. We're having success in articulating balancing growing an employment branding strategy generally and keeping in mind passive job seekers, that you can invest some time in there and save some of your effort in just trying to ping people on LinkedIn or you know, just exclusive over relying on external recruiters, which play an important role. But if you overextend, you're gonna kill your budget. So I think some of this does have to be a case for me never putting my clothes away in my closet would save me some short-term time, but over the long term, it costs me time because I can't find anything and my life's a mess. So we invest little bits of time to keep our lives with some degree of organization so we can be better functioning over that time. And I think there are a lot of corollaries to the strategy. We'll always kick the can down, but if you're struggling to hire or you're struggling to understand why did I post my job listing somewhere and no one came or a very low number of people came, a lot of that is about what the narrative your company has in the minds of the people you want to apply. So I do think some of this is me having to sell, you know, or convince an industry to say you do need to like put some time away. And I think there's a lot of people making the case that this is important. We've seen the differences. We've seen the differences with clients we have. Clients who have, we actually are increasingly talking about whether we should even allow kind of one-off, can I pay a lowest amount of money to table at one of your events or just to post a job description, job listing, because they don't have as much success as that organization that has invested the time. To your point, they've been there, you know, they're speaking at the event, attending at the events, even when they're not hiring at that immediate moment. They're just out and about in some form. They have some coworker who's present. You know, they do some storytelling, some blog posts, and some guest posts when they don't have some other strategy. And then boom, when they post that listing, they always have the most success. Because, I mean, think about us all as individuals. There are, we're constantly making these decisions about what are the 20 organizations that, yeah, if a dream job came up at that organization, okay, that's something I'd consider. But there are other organizations that I know we all have in our brain that if your perfect job written to your, to you know, with you in mind came up, you might be like, yikes, I've not heard great things about what's in there. And I don't even know if it's worth it. Where do you want to be as on that spectrum? And that's the decision you have to make around putting some time in here.
Interesting. In regards to reviews, you know, we're an HR dashboard and we're centralizing data. And one of those sources of data is Glassdoor. So I'm curious about the perception of sites like Glassdoor from the companies you're talking to, since for us it's literally hit or miss. Some people just believe that it's nonsense and it doesn't really make sense in regards to the way that people are leaving reviews. Other people live and die by it and they really care about their reviews as seriously as a restaurant would care about their Yelp reviews. So I'm curious as to how you are talking to organizations about how are they perceived from their own website and from their own owned content versus places where people can talk about them and give reviews like Glassdoor.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think your Yelp Glassdoor comparison is, of course, dead on. It's the same thing in the restaurant industry. People who, as you just said, believe it wholeheartedly and think it's total nonsense. Look, I've seen a range of opinions on lots of different large platforms, Glassdoor being obviously a particularly interesting one, but I mean, Stack Overflow and other just general job posting and career websites. There's a range of opinions. And some of it that people are still using them out of habit. Some people just use it for scale. We work with organizations that do both, like a more targeted strategy like us and a bigger brand, or they're following pretty closely. I think the reality is everyone has to make a bit of their own decision about where they're going to invest some time and resources in focusing. It's easy for me to say, but of course, anywhere that someone is publicly writing about your organization falls in an employment branding strategy. So if you have a Glassdoor problem, if you've had a lot of staff turnover, which does happen for good and bad reasons, and a lot of them are angry, and they found that as a resource, that's a problem. I mean, that is something that is going to impact your employee brand. People do find those resources. I think you can counteract it with other resources and tools, but I don't think you can ignore anything that your employees have decided are important for them. And that's scary in a new age because you are giving up control. But if your teammates think something's important, or your former teammates think a place or a forum or a conversation is important, you got to engage there. So I think it's probably, a great employment branding strategy is not going to cover up a miserable company culture. A passive job seeker strategy will not make up for a calcified organizational culture. That needs to happen first. So perhaps I should have said that at the top, that this is all just to make sure, assuming you do have a team that is doing interesting work and likes working there, that this can help elevate and escalate that to the broader world. But it can't hide it if it's rotten. But hey, every organization on the planet that is at a big enough scale to warrant it has gotten bad reviews, just like every restaurant that's big enough has gotten a bad Yelp review. So I think it's more in the context of what else is around. And this is part of the mix. So it's a challenge around timing for sure. I think you want to be more aggressive about it. So if you don't yet have those Glassdoor reviews, in addition to, treating your teammate well and being upfront and intentional and transparent, I think you do want to be upfront about telling your organizational narrative to the wider world in lots of different ways. Earned media, relationships with others, your own content marketing, having your teammates speak and be more public. You want to do that work for all those reasons and more.
Speaking of earned media, one of the ways that you could cover up potential bad reviews or a negative perception of your company online is to actually have great press about your company, which does away or at least covers up the bad reviews if you have them, but also at the same time allows more passive candidates to know about you and what you do. So and back to that conversation about HR versus marketing and who's responsible for what, you're the first journalist we've had on the podcast. So I have to ask, how should a company go about trying to get press, not about their product, but about their company?
Yep. No, I think that's great. And the first clarification again, underscoring what I said a moment ago. If those rotten reviews are there because you are rotten, you're long-term not going to cover it. That perhaps is obvious, but I just want to make sure I was clear there that, this strategy is for organizations that, look, we've had companies that did rounds of layoffs and come to us as a news organization ahead of time and say, hey, this is going to break, but I want to be part of articulating why we did it. Every large organization ever in some form has done a layoff or 1,000 at some point. It's hard, it's sad, it's difficult, it's frustrating, but there are really good and really bad reasons. So as a newsroom, we approach layoffs or whatever bad news you would count or whatever motivator might result in a lot of justified bad Glassdoor reviews or what have you. They've happened for lots of reasons. So we don't approach it that just because you've done some layoffs, it means that your organization's in turmoil. That it can mean that, but it can mean that your strategy was off or that you made a mistake. And that sucks for those individuals, but that is part of economic dynamism for good and for bad. So yes, assuming that you do have a something real and genuine and a team that wants to be there and you're working on a business hypothesis or a product line that is interesting. An earned media PR strategy, of course, makes that and is part of the employment branding bucket. And it is part of the passive job seeker strategy where people bump into your organization from time to time and say, that's a place that I would work someday. The trick that we often have to your real question, Bruce, is depends on who you want to pitch. And I think one mistake I see a lot of organizations make is they assume all media is the exact same. And that's, of course, not true. You have to understand. I mean, the first step I take to anyone when they say, how do I get press coverage is step one. What news organization do you want to target? Step two, who is the person who writes the things that you like? Step three, What's an example of something that they have done that you would want your organization to be into? You know, what's an article that if you swapped in your organization's name, you'd be happy? And if you can't find an example of the publication and the reporter you're looking at having ever done a story that is the one you want, it's probably the wrong choice. So you should be able to say, yes, this story that this reporter in this publication wrote about this company is the exact thing that I would like for my organization. Great. That's your first set of steps. If you've identified that, then you're on the right track. And from there, it is it's what's new and interesting. That's always what it is. It's time hook, timeliness, why now? And it's interesting. What can our readers learn? It's reader value. Because ultimately, every newsroom is supposed to be giving something for their readers first, not the source or the organization first. People who are great at this might get lots of little hits into trend stories. Hey, did you hear, news organization, you have written about VR and my company did something with VR. I would be a source for that. Okay, great. Be a source. And you're with other companies. If you want just the thing about your company culture, it's a little tricky because it can seem really self-serving. And those aren't, if you look at it, those aren't really common items. We do some of them ourselves, but we do a lot more with our clients because they aren't typically things that readers exclusively want. You know, a story about a single organization's company culture. They like profiles of companies, and we do some of those. But it depends a lot on what you want. So the core of it is, why the heck are you different than three other organizations that are similar to you? If you actually have something special beyond just your own hubris, but you're actually approaching something different that other organizations could learn from, and you're willing to share for other people to learn from you, then you're in good shape. And you can email that reporter and say, hey, saw you did this, love that story, great work. Thought you might be interested that we're doing this thing that we think is pretty distinct for this reason. Let me know if you want to have more. Hear more. That's your email. And also it helps to build a relationship over time with that reporter or news organization. You know, small story here, bigger story later. But that's the high level angle. And new, interesting, and genuine does end up working well in the press.
Nice. And then when you get that press, although it might be very difficult to get, and you start having these passive job seekers coming in, once you start talking to them, how often do you give them updates or let them know what's going on with your company? I know throughout this conversation, we've been making the parallel between sales and marketing, or excuse me, marketing and HR. And the biggest difference on the marketing side is that when you're creating a pipeline, you're creating that pipeline with the intention of hoping to close as many customers as quickly as possible. And the only reason why you're continuing to give them updates and put them on an email newsletter is to hopefully turn them and convert them into a customer. But on the HR side, that's not always the case because you just might not have any positions.
Yep. Yeah. And people do this differently. We have organizations that that have a follow us button. We do some work with Vanguard, the financial services firm. And on their jobs, their careers page, they have basically follow this role or follow us or be, it's basically an email list that can ping you depending on your interests and types of roles. That's a really interesting passive job seeker strategy. That's saying, I don't need a job right now with you, Vanguard, but I'd be interested to know what ones you have in the future. Super smart strategy. So depending on your capacities, that is one way. Hey, just join an email list and we'll ping that email list whenever we have any job opening. If you're big enough an organization, maybe you specify it by department. That's one easy way. A lot of people do this with social because obviously social is a really easy way to follow along with a company. And we hear in survey data lots of people who I think critically early on in the funnel with passive job seekers, you don't know what they might end up being. Maybe that person will actually get a new job and they'll become a client. Maybe it is customer, value. The point is you're creating fans who value your organizational promise and come to know your organizational culture. And as you develop that, they might end up converting. So I think my point is, depending on your scale, if it's really hard to create a truly separate channel for people who are just following along, you might just want them to be in your existing efforts. you know, follow us on social. I do get you know, an email every once in a while. Hey, you know, just like what you guys are doing. Here's a resume just in case you have any openings. I don't know if you do. And yeah, you respond to that. Wow. Awesome. Thank you so much for liking what we're up to. If you don't already, follow us on social here. They typically do. But the point is, you might have existing funnels or channels that you're doing right now that you could push that person to be a part of to then bump into when you are going to post a job feature. But some kind of push tool like email or otherwise are valuable, and you can have those lists if you have the capacity to do that.
Great. And then last question before we go into our final section of the podcast, are there any words of wisdom, or if there's only one thing that a person remembered about attracting passive job seekers, what would that be?
You hit on it a little bit earlier, but you're trying to let people know they want to work with you before they know they can work with you. And I think that is defining both employment branding as a general top of the funnel strategy and a passive job seeker strategy that should run along your entire talent acquisition funnel. That's what you're doing. And once you get over this hurdle of thinking, I have a job opening right now and I only want those people to know about it, and instead saying, I want holistically for people who might want to work in a place like this to know we do interesting work, that sums up what we do, and I think is what you can walk away and know you should care about as an HR professional, and you should be communicating to your other departments that it's just a subtle awareness of who else might be following along or reading or listening. You might not consider that the person you thought would only land on your page because they might be a customer might also be poking around because they might someday want to work for you. And that's a good, important reminder to know your personas of who's following you.
Great. That was awesome. So now we're going to go into my favorite section of the podcast, which is the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
Yes. I'm a podcast listener, Bruce. So I've seen some of these. You are so Bruce. I love it. I'm ready.
I am. All right. So for the listeners out there, for the first time you're hearing this, I'm going to ask Chris a real, a random, and a ridiculous question. Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right. So the real question. You already know what this is because you've heard previous episodes, but I am a bread pudding fanatic. So I need to know, do you like bread pudding? And so I know if we can still be friends. And also, if you do, how do you like it made?
I have only had it once. I did like it. So I think that means we can still be friends.
Okay.
But I only had it once, so I can't even begin to tell you how I prefer it. And every time I've heard you ask someone like this on the podcast, I've told myself I need to like fake an answer or like Google and give him an answer. But then I this morning decided I will not lie to you. And I do not have a real answer because I've only had it once.
I appreciate that. And I hope everyone else appreciates your integrity.
I'm nothing if not a fan of God.
Got it. I think I'm going to have an event, bread pudding with Bruce, with a lot.
Yeah, that to be your first live podcast recording.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. So at the time of this podcast recording, Black Panther just came out. Mm. And so the random question, who's your favorite superhero?
Oh, now I thought you were going with Black Panther. I'm eager to see it. My favorite, I'm not going to have an interesting answer. I was a 10-year-old boy who had a Wonder Woman figurine in addition to Superman and Batman and Spider-Man, and I do really remember flying Wonder Woman around my childhood bedroom. She was pretty high. So I would say I'm gonna say Wonder Woman.
Okay, got it. And the ridiculous question. So you are a journalist, so I have to ask, what's the most ridiculous thing you've recently read in the news?
Oh, wow. I'm not going to take the bait and go too obvious with the era we are in. I'm going to avoid that. And what's the most ridiculous? Though you and I both do work elsewhere in this beautiful country of ours, you and I both are situated in Philadelphia. And so I can't imagine anything more ridiculous then the stories that some of which I've witnessed, some of which I did not, coming out of the NFL's own Philadelphia Eagles winning the Super Bowl and then doing all sorts of madness. And so for those of you who have not seen the video and then the ensuing news coverage of trying to find the man who, in perhaps a drunken or drugged enthusiasm for the Eagles post Super Bowl, ate a piece of horse manure from a cop horse.
What?
Have you not seen this, Bruce?
Not.
Yeah, that, yeah. So that is the most ridiculous thing I've seen. And you're watching the video that is, and you are like, there's no way this is actually going to happen. It happens. And that is the most ridiculous thing that I've seen in the news, because then, of course, I think to the credit of some Philadelphia media, have been trying to find the actual guy and interview him, because he's on video doing it. So I Google, you all should Google that if you haven't seen it already. That is the most ridiculous thing I've seen. Maybe ever, to be honest, not even recently.
I now have to think whether or not we're going to put that in the show notes. I have to think about it.
Yeah, good luck on that.
All right, and then last question, final question. Your favorite and least favorite part about selling to HR/recruiters or just being in the HR space in general?
Yeah. My favorite part is this is real and meaningful mission work. Efficiently finding and connecting people for jobs they care and love to help organizations thrive is a beautiful, enduring legacy. And so I think it matches perfectly with our own newsroom aptitudes and our organizational mission. So I love that because it fits so neatly. You know, our like client value is something that I genuinely believe is important for the cities I care about and the people in the communities we serve. So that's, it just cleanly fits. And what don't I like? I mean, we're so constrained in time, probably. As we talked about earlier, that when it can be difficult more than other categories. Like, we're a newsroom, so marketing and communications people, we don't struggle to connect with them. We have lots of those conversations. And if anything, we struggle to keep up with for them. So it's new for me for how strapped the recruiting person might be to get them on the phone and actually articulate what we're seeing in the data. So that's a challenge, but that's, you know, that's that'll be familiar to anyone in any kind of sales role. But I feel like HR folks are particularly strapped, and it's interesting to say, we know how to tell stories that will actually create a funnel for you to more efficiently hire people. And it's difficult to get people, enough people to cut through all of the constraints and the stresses they have to try something new, which I think you also know well. So that's the challenge and the opportunity.
I know that all too well. Almost impossible, yep, to get an HR person on the phone.
Yeah.
But with that being said, Chris Wink, thank you for being such an awesome and amazing podcast guest. Woo!
Adam, thank
you.
So excited. Yeah, hit me up. I'm chris@technicallymedia.com. I'm at Christopher Wink on Twitter. Holler at me.
You're doing my work for you.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. I was just about to say, where can people find you technically online?
Dang, my bad. Yeah, we're very active Twitter. I'm a Twitter nerd. I'm at Christopher Wink on Twitter. And then, yeah, email chris@technicallymedia.com. That's an easier to explain than the technically URL. But yeah, technically, we publish in 5 markets: Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Delaware, and DC. Increasingly, we're visiting other communities. We care about how local tech and business climates are evolving for the future. And so that includes growth companies. It includes technical talent. So our audience is primarily made of technologists and entrepreneurs, but we also cover the ecosystems around them. So you should read us. We got really popular daily newsletters that that thousands of people read. And it's a super fun conversation to be following. So join us, friends.
I would strongly encourage all of you to also subscribe to their newsletter. I get it all the time. I read it all the time. Read it daily. It's amazing. So, Chris, thanks again for being on the podcast. And for all you listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star iTunes rating as well as leave a comment. We love to hear all of your comments. That allows us to make the show better. And if you haven't already, please download us on your favorite podcast player. And HR folks out there, please remember, continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.